Hi, this is Whitley. I have reopened our GoFundMe campaign in the hope of getting some more contributions because rebuilding the website is proving to be a more complex and challenging and financially challenging task than I had at first anticipated. It's going to be a beautiful job. We're going to have soon a new subscriber section that allows PayPal and has all kinds of different perks that we don't have now. And later on down the road, a new and beautiful front end for the site. But right now, we're doing the hard part, which is the back end. And I need your help pretty badly. So please click on the GoFundMe on the Dreamland and Experience show pages or click on the ad that has reappeared on unknowncountry.com. I need you to do this. Please help me.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today we have with us one of our favorite guests, Peter Lavenda. Peter has been on Dreamland many, many times over the years. So if you're a subscriber and you have not listened to Peter's earlier shows, you must not miss any of them. They are all extraordinary. Peter is the author of the epic book, or group of books, I should say, Sinister Forces, which goes deeply into the occult formation of the United States, and as we proceed down the road of history, is becoming terrifyingly prophetic. We'll talk a little bit about that, but he is also the co-author with Tom DeLonge of Secret Machines, which is the book that was, in a sense, the genesis to the Stars Academy, which, of course, is making a great big splash right now on the Internet. Peter, welcome to Dreamland.
Many thanks for having me on, Whitley. I'm always happy to be here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I usually get so excited, I almost can't stand it. You know, Peter, you're even an expert on tantric mysticism, and you also did a lot of research for Norman Mailer. I consider you one of the world's great experts on what is hidden in our lives, what is hidden from us in our lives and about our lives. We're going to go on to Secret Machines almost immediately, but before we do that, I want to go back to Sinister Forces, because as I look at that book, I see now some of those forces emerging into a kind of unholy and frightening visibility. Now, could you tell us first what Sinister Forces is, and how do you react to that question?
Well, they're both very good. I mean, Sinister Forces, what are they? They are, the book itself was an attempt to show that there is a force in history, let's say, a force in nature that erupts from time to time through synchronicity, through coincidence, that sort of thing, which can lead you into a deeper understanding of what actually is at work in the world. There's another level of activity, of causality, of which we are not normally consciously aware. And it's not conspiracy theory in the sense that most people understand it today. I think that quite often events happen beyond the conscious control of their participants. Things are taking place beyond their understanding even. They may be used, people may be used as instruments of this power, wittingly or unwittingly, but that there is another force. There's a kind of a quantum effect in history. And, you know, I've used specific events like the Kennedy assassination, the most famous one, sort of the touchstone for all conspiracy theories. And I look at that from the point of view of perhaps, you know, there's a conspiracy. There were people who were conspiring to kill the president. But there were all sorts of other events surrounding that event, all sorts of other characters, all sorts of other things that were going on that don't really fit into the neat idea of the legal definition of conspiracy, but something that's more transcendent was taking place, as though an event that takes place in our space and time has a ripple effect that goes out in different directions. And so I wanted to look at that. And I wanted to say, you know, I mean, the whole reason I got involved in, for instance, the UFO community, in a sense, was from the assassination, was because there were so many very strange individuals associated with the Kennedy assassination who were also associated with the UFO phenomenon in one way or another. So all of these things, in a sense, got together in my fevered brain and resulted in sinister forces of my trying to figure out where those strands of connection were and trying to connect those particular dots and coming up with a kind of extra-dimensional aspect to human history. And if there's any truth at all to quantum theory, for instance, perhaps quantum theory, in a sense, also exists at the level of history in some way.
Well, in other words, that there is a level of indeterminacy and mirroring, even mirroring across time in history, as well as that actually reflects what's happening at the discrete energy level of the universe, the quantum level. You know, one of the most bizarre things about that was the fact, I believe Fred Chrisman was in New Orleans and somehow connected with Lee Harvey Oswald. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what Jim Garrison, the district attorney for New Orleans, was trying to discover. He subpoenaed Fred Chrisman to appear before his committee because he thought that Chrisman may have had some information critical to understanding the assassination and possibly had met Lee Oswald at some point. Perhaps there was an idea that maybe Chrisman was involved with the Minutemen organization, so sort of a far-right paramilitary group at the time, which people don't really hear about much anymore. But at the time, they were quite notorious. But Chrisman, of course, also was there at the very beginning of the UFO phenomenon in June of 1947. So to find him suddenly being subpoenaed by Jim Garrison was one of those things that made me sit back and say, wait a minute. You know, I mean, Garrison's investigation of Chrisman had nothing to do with UFOs. It didn't really refer to that event at all. And yet Chrisman was there. Chrisman was a major factotum, in a sense, of that really weird Puget Sound Maury Island affair. And then we had, famously Guy Bannister, who did know Lee Harvey Oswald and who was involved in some kind of conspiracy or some connection with the assassination, who was also investigating UFOs in 1947 for J. Edgar Hoover when he was with the FBI in that specific region of the country in the Pacific Northwest. So suddenly you have all these guys who in 47 were sending, you know, information to the media or back to the FBI on the UFO phenomenon, and then, you know, 20 years later, they're suspects in the assassination. So that's what led me into this and seeing these connections and asking myself, well, you know, Newtonian physics, you know, describes on a macro level what we go through every day in reality. But there's a quantum physics, which is sort of at the sub-microscopic level, which is another world and another kind of reality. And they both sort of exist at the same time. So I'm looking at history the same way. Maybe there's the Newtonian history, you know, which is facts and figures and names, dates, and places. But then there's this weird, uncanny connection below the surface, which seems to me to be, for want of a better term, the quantum aspect of history.
Free Dreamlanders, we're taking a little break. Why don't you subscribe? And then you won't be taking any more little breaks. You'll be able to listen to the whole show, and this is interesting stuff. You don't get this anywhere else. We'll be right back.
Whitley's now legendary book, Supernatural, written with Professor Jeffrey Kripal, is now out in paperback. 70 five-star reviews on Amazon. Called thought-provoking by Kirkus Reviews. Famed paranormal researcher Dean Radin says it'll make your hair stand on end. What it will do is take you through dozens of never-before-published Whitley Strieber experiences, brilliantly analyzed by one of the world's leading experts on the unknown. Don't miss this exciting, groundbreaking winner. Get yours today, The Supernatural, Why the Unexplained is Real. There's a great new contest for subscribers on unknowncountry.com. We're giving away 10 copies of The Supernatural paperback, signed by Whitley. The drawing will be held on October 15th. Become a subscriber and find out how to enter.
This is Whitley Strieber. I'd like to let you know that The Path and the Communion Letters are both have just been published in ebook format for $3.99. Both books have become collector's items and are quite expensive in paper format, but now you can get them as an ebook for just $3.99, and you can get them anywhere ebooks are sold, for your Nook, for your Kindle, on Kobo, on Apple Books. Anywhere you get ebooks, you will find them. And why should you look? Well, there's only one path. The Tarot Path is a unique book that completely re-envisions the Tarot of Marseille, showing how you can use it in your own life to understand yourself and your inner search with great clarity. There's nothing quite like it. It's a new idea, but also a very old one, because when you lay out the cards in the way described in The Path, you'll know immediately they were intended originally to be put together in this way. Communion Letters, edited by Ann Strieber, is a collection of letters from close encounter witnesses around the world that shed incredible new light on the close encounter experience. Don't miss either book. They are well worth $3.99 each.
Where do you find Eben Alexander, Dean Radin, Jim Mars, Joseph Farrell, Zechariah Sitchin, William Henry, George Noory, Lawrence Gardner, Trish and Rob McGregor, Marie D. Jones, Marla Fries, Peter Lavenda, Richard Dolan, Starfire Tour, Linda Moulton Howe, and hundreds of others, all telling you their deepest secrets? In the Dreamland Archive on UnknownCountry.com. Nearly 1,000 exciting, mind-opening interviews, all yours for under $5 a month. Go to UnknownCountry.com and subscribe today. Hours of listening pleasure. Expect to be amazed.
We're talking to Peter Lavenda, author of Secret Machines, with Tom DeLonge. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking about all that's going on with Tom DeLonge. But this all has a beginning somewhere, and that's why we're not talking about it yet. We're going deeper into what happened to John F. Kennedy, which relates to everything that's happening now in this area, I believe. Peter, is there any evidence that Kennedy was trying to shake the UFO tree before he was assassinated?
Well, there's evidence that he was really on the threshold of something like that. He was, as we all know, he was instrumental in jumpstarting our space program and giving it a direction and a mission to get somebody on the moon within 10 years. Which, of course, did happen, was successful. But more than that, he also actually discussed the possibility of maybe cooperating with the Soviet Union in space exploration. And I think that made a lot of people very nervous, the possibility that, you know, what we know about space exploration, aerospace science, astronomy, even some of the advantages we had in that area might be revealed to the Russians, and I think it made a lot of people very nervous. I'm not saying that was the reason for the assassination, but it could be have been a contributing factor where people were very nervous that Kennedy would spill the beans. And maybe Kennedy had information regarding the UFO phenomenon, and I think that people in government and people perhaps at the Pentagon were a little nervous that maybe Kennedy would tell the Russians what we knew about that aspect of space exploration, and we would get nothing back from the Russians in return, and that the Soviets would exploit this information in some way. So, you know, there have been memos released that supposedly say that Kennedy wanted to, you know, open the UFO files once and for all. I'm not sure if those memos are validated, if they're genuine or not. I'm sort of out to... The jury's still out for me on that aspect. But the fact that he was so front and center with going to the moon, with space exploration, wanting to beat the Soviets because, you know, they had put a man in space before we did. They had, you know, orbited the Earth with their Sputnik. I remember that event very clearly. I was a child living at the time when Sputnik first flew over the United States, so we were all sort of panicking about that. So I remember the mood in the country at that moment when the Russians were beating us in the space race. So I think that this was a contributing factor. Kennedy was really on the forefront of so many political but also cultural events in our lifetime that I think he was a touchstone for all of that. And it's no wonder that you find a whole web of interconnections between him and his administration and his assassination with all different areas of life in the United States, and including, of course, the UFO phenomenon.
You know, Jim Mars once said to me a very interesting thing. We were not talking on the radio, but we were together. And I said to him, Jim, what, in your opinion, is the core reason that Kennedy ended up getting assassinated? He said immediately, too many people didn't say no, which I thought was a very astute comment. I think Kennedy was assassinated for an awful lot of reasons. Lyndon Johnson was going to go to jail and be thrown off the ticket, in the opposite order, actually, in all probability. If you read Robert Caro's books, you find that that's almost an inevitability. J. Edgar Hoover was under pressure. The mafia was under pressure. The people like the former SS officer Louis Swearingen, who was involved in the Bay of Pigs disaster, were absolutely furious at Kennedy. He was not the only one. So there a lot of people, there was a kind of an upwelling of animosity against the man at the time. Now, we're going to take another little break, and after we come back, we're going down a different, deeper road into the past, the present, and the future with Peter in a whole new way, because, folks, the times, they are a-changin'.
Ever wonder what the Close Encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
Listen to some words from one of our longtime subscribers.
As a subscriber of Dreamland for many years, it's been an incredible adventure and truly a Rosetta Stone for so many of the experiences that all of your listeners have had. Please join us. It's a fantastic ride. But I will say that certainly Dreamland does reflect something that I've always known, that man's mind mirrors a universe that mirrors man's mind. And no other place will you get this truth than on Dreamland. Come join us.
Some of the most thrilling, mind-opening interviews ever recorded are in the Dreamland Archive. Open your mind to Sir Lawrence Gardner's brilliant vision of the past. Listen to Russell Targ's phenomenal insights about ESP. Be inspired by Dr. Eben Alexander's stunning near-death experience. Listen to an actual recording from a plane as it was attacked by a gigantic flying disc. Be transported to a new level of inner grace with Whitley Strieber's meditations. Enjoy The Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Secret School, and Superstorm audiobooks, and so much more. The UnknownCountry.com subscriber section. As little as 10 cents a day. Priceless. Whitley Strieber, one of the great authors of our time. War Day changed the way we think about nuclear war. Communion led millions to realize that they had encountered the visitors. Superstorm gave a word to the world that has become the byword of our time. The Key is among the most prophetic books ever written. And where can you get inside the mind that created all this? On UnknownCountry.com, where Whitley's life stories, his powerful meditations, his books, Communion, Transformation, The Secret School, and others are available in audio format. And so much more exclusive Whitley Strieber material. Join Whitley on the path to tomorrow. How? Subscribe to UnknownCountry.com today.
We're talking to Peter Lavenda, his new book with Tom DeLonge, Secret Machines. Do get Secret Machines. And Peter, how can we find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me, of course, at my own website, which is my name, peterlavenda.com. But I'm also For My Sins on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram. So you'll find me there as well.
Okay, you sound immensely enthusiastic about being in social media. It can be hard, I agree. It can also be fun and delightful. I've met some wonderful people in social media. I also had the experience of being one of those Facebook sites that had been identified by Russian intelligence as being influential, with the result that I was inundated during the election with fake people. They weren't real. And what was so, in other words, they were friends and followers, and they had been set up months beforehand. And they suddenly came pouring onto my website telling all kinds of crazy lies. And my Facebook page, and I had to keep unfriending them and unfriending them. I unfriended over 200 fake Facebook avatars in the time going up to the election.
I believe it.
It was extraordinary. And it turns out they were all Russian generated. And all of them telling just one lie after another. It was terrifying. Yep. Anyway, that's in the past. Hopefully it'll really all be in the past fairly soon and we can get on with being a good country. But in any case, let's go back to a little bit before the time that Secret Machines covers. And Secret Machines is basically, folks, is a book about the real human past, or the human past reimagined in a new way. But one of the things that I don't believe you address in the book, and at least if you did, I read the book and I did not, it didn't stand out, is the possibility that this may go even farther back before this planet even existed, that the solar system itself may be designed so that this planet could harbor life safely. Does that have any resonance with you at all, Peter?
Well, that's of course, you're absolutely right. I do not go that deep or that far back in Secret Machines in Gods. But now that you bring that up, I have to think about that. That's a pretty profound statement that perhaps even the solar system itself was designed that way. It does seem, you know, rather bizarre looking at all the other, you know, planets we've studied and the solar systems, the other star systems we've looked at, and the constant search for intelligent life in the form of radio signals or anything else that we haven't found anyone yet except us.
Yeah.
So it does seem that likely that, you know, if you're looking at a real cause and effect, a very sort of linear approach to this, why did it happen? You know, why do we have life on this planet? You know, why are we so unique? You know, was it deliberate? I'm willing to entertain that idea and to give it a lot more thought and to see how that would have happened.
Well, when you look at it, what you see is this. The sun is a type of star known as a yellow dwarf. Most yellow dwarfs have sterile planetary systems because they explode out ferocious waves of gamma rays every few 100,000 years. We know this because we see them doing it out in the galaxy. Now, ours does not. We know it doesn't because we wouldn't be here if it did.
Yeah.
It is strikingly benign compared to most of its sisters or brothers, depending on how you look at it. Again, Earth is just in the exact center of the narrow 50,000 mile deep habitable zone around this star. Third, the moon, which emerged out of a huge impact. You know what the crater on Earth, that Earth was left behind on Earth, that is by the moon? It's called the Pacific Ocean. That was a big impact. Without the moon to slow the rotational winds of Earth, because it's at the perfect distance and is the perfect size, we would not be here. There would be nothing on the Earth more than lichens and things, because the winds naturally generated by the rotation of the planet would be too strong. The moon acts as a kind of brake. If the gas giants out beyond Mars weren't here, neither would we, because we would have long since been destroyed by asteroids coming in from deep space. And the moon is there sweeping up most of the ones that do get through, with the result that Earth is hit far less frequently by bolides and large objects than any other planet that we know of in the solar system. So it's like a Goldilocks planet in a perfect place. And I just wonder, and that gets me now to this idea, the basic idea of the book, which is so enthralling. It's a little bit like the Ancient Aliens, but it's much more complex than that and deeper than that, folks. And we're going to get into that. But tell us now, we're going to start where you start. You start with the idea that we have actually been looking at more advanced or higher life forms for a long time. You describe our entire reaction to them as a cargo cult, which is a stunning idea. Can you get into what you mean by that?
Yeah, sure. The opening of the book, you know, sort of sets it up that way, and it's something that actually got a lot of attention from the people who would later become our advisors in the Secret Machines Project. And it was this approach which I think fascinated them, and that is that right around the time of World War II in the South Pacific and Borneo, Papua New Guinea, and in that area, we had people living basically a Stone Age existence. They had never seen technology. They had never seen other human beings before. They had no idea what was going on in the rest of the world. They were isolated. And because of World War II, because of the Japanese invasions that were taking place, and then the resistance by the nationalist forces and the Americans, the British, and so on, suddenly these remote islands were now in the center of military activity. So you had Stone Age people sort of gazing out from the rainforest and seeing aircraft land, seeing landing strips being created, seeing men and women, and mostly men, in strange, you know, get-ups and strange costumes coming out with all sorts of goodies, with food and with water and with medicine and with technology, with weapons, with all sorts of things, with vehicles, with things that, I mean, if you've never gone through the stages of technological evolution and suddenly all this was dropped on your lap in front of you, your reaction would be extreme. You wouldn't know what you were looking at. It would be like being on an acid trip, because suddenly reality wasn't reality anymore. There was a different reality. And these people then, after observing all of this, their reaction was religious, in a sense. They created their own system. They started building their own landing strips in imitation of what they saw. They built control towers out of bamboo. They built headphones out of coconuts. They were trying to imitate what they saw in the hopes that through this imitation, planes would land for them and give them all the things they saw the planes giving to the troops that were landing in the jungles. And that created what they called the cargo cult. It was a cult built around the idea that if you did the right things, cargo would show up. You know, goods would show up, boxes of food and all sorts of great things would suddenly appear. My point in Secret Machines Gods was that that's who we are. This explains human civilization. It explains everything we're doing and everything we've been through. We are a cargo cult. basically the human races. At some point in the distant prehistory, there was contact of some kind. We saw that. And ever since then, we've been doing things imitating that initial traumatic experience, let's say. So we're going through this constantly, trying to get the cargo to land, trying to get these things to happen. And I include not just our religion in this, but our culture, our arts, and most especially our science, which is still devoted in large part to getting off the planet, to duplicating that initial contact, which quite possibly involved some kind of craft leaving the planet and going to the heavens.
Well, you know, that cargo cult aspect of it is still very much with us. I can remember back before the black budget, when the Air Force budget was still being published in its entirety. I go back a while. The Aurora space plane, which they now claim never existed, was prominent in their development, in their budget. And what I am rather sure happened, in fact, I'd go so far as to say, for various reasons, I'm certain of it, is that UFOs were observed and a list of capabilities was drawn up and transmitted by the Air Force to private industry, to the defense industry, to the aeronautics industry. And basically, they were told to build something like this. And they had no command of gravity. Therefore, they built something that was supposed to work like that, like a UFO, but using obviously much more primitive technologies. It was possible for it to turn on a dime at high speed, but among other things, they had to build a force opposite suit for the pilots to wear so that their bodies would not be smashed by G-forces when the plane at high speed made these sudden turns. The result of this was a call went out at one point. The Air Force was desperate for orthopedic surgeons to help repair shattered hips. So now the Aurora space plane no longer exists, but it was pure cargo cult from beginning to end. So now you know, folks. Let's go on.
There you go.
Let's go on. Is the craft being proposed by the To the Stars group, the spacecraft that they talked about and that they have had a very sexy illustration of put up on their website, another example of a cargo cult, or have we gotten farther?
Well, that's a good question, and let me see how I can answer that. As you know, the designs for this are originating out of the group of advisors that we now have, which is growing sort of almost daily. And core to this is a guy called Steve Justice, who was the until he retired recently, he was the program director for Advanced Systems from Skunk Works. And he made a statement which might have gotten lost in a lot of the other things that have been going on recently, that basically he wants to duplicate the kind of technologies that UFOs are known for. I mean, he pretty much openly said that. So that's what he's doing with the To the Stars group, is trying to figure out how to make exactly that kind of craft work. And it's not just a question of maybe the design of the craft itself, but the propulsion system would be a completely new energy system. From what I understand from the conversations that I've had and what I've heard, it's going to actually increase its energy output rather than decrease it. In other words, completely opposite from what we normally do. We throw a lot of energy into something. We get something out of that machine, that device, whatever it is, which is less than what we put in. Machines use energy. They don't generate more energy based on what is given to them. This type of energy system, from what I understand, and I could be getting this, incorrectly, but the last I heard was that the energy systems they're proposing will actually generate more energy than what they take in. And it's going to have tremendous implications, not just for aerospace design and aircraft, but also for other types of technologies on the planet. There's been a lot of discussion about, you know, zero-point energy on the one hand or, you know, free energy on the other. And all of these concepts have been swirling around now for, you know, 70 to 100 years. This is actually an approach to get there. It's a step in that direction. And it's a way of generating more energy of a specific kind, greater than the energy going in, which would seem to, you know, violate some of the laws of physics. But according to these people that are working on this, there is a way for this to be possible, and it has to do something with the spaces between atoms and utilizing some kind of mini or micro vacuum. And it's way over my pay grade to understand what these things mean. And I haven't really sat down and had, you know, really good technical discussions with these gentlemen yet, because they're pretty new to our program. So I'm hoping to get some more information for everyone at a later date.
Okay, well, we're going to go deeper now because we have come to the end of the free part of Dreamland. And when we do go deeper, we're going to get into just what the past experienced. What did they find out? What did they see in the night sky? Who were these gods that they attempted to relate to? Is Earth a prison? We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.